pushed off the car and approached us. "This is my line," I warned Volkov, stepping between the vampires and Boaz. "Cross it. Hurt someone I love. And there's no going back." The threat had the desired effect, but I got the impression admitting I loved Boaz, no matter that it was mostly unrequited, had painted a target on his carotid. The growl of a motorcycle approaching caught the guard's attention and shattered our stalemate.
"I'll be in touch."
Volkov shoved his hands into his pockets.
"Soon."
Boaz and I stood together in silence until their taillights flashed at the end of the street.
"He's going to be a problem,"
he predicted as he returned to the car to gather my things.
"Vamps are hella territorial, and he thinks I hiked my leg on his hydrant tonight by bringing you home."
Of course he would remember the hydrant comment. "We'll figure something out." I frowned at the limp he had concealed from the vampires. "For now, you need to go home and take care of your leg." He grunted.
"Don't start mother-henning me, squirt."
"You're lucky you didn't break something jumping onto the dais." I shoved him gently. "Count your blessings." Grumbling all the way, he bent down and dropped a kiss on top of my head as he passed off Keat and the box.
"Don't think this means you can start bossing me around every day."
I batted my lashes at him. "I wouldn't dream of it." A herd of wild buffalo would have made a quieter exit than Boaz's stomping. I got the feeling he wasn't thrilled leaving me alone for the night. But asking him to stay over wasn't happening. I had too much to process tonight without adding the temptation of Boaz sleeping down the hall from me to the mix. Ready for this night to end, I took the stairs and sang out, "I'm home!" The porch light blazed in welcome, and I shuffled in with all my burdens as the door shut and the latches engaged until Wooly was locked up tight behind me. An air of expectation hung around me as she attempted to use silence to crack me, but I was a tough nut and on to her tricks. After all, I had taught her most of them. "I'm sorry, girl." I rested my forehead against the door. "So much happened tonight, and I don't want to get into the gory details." A floorboard groaned in protest. "I'll give you the scoop tomorrow, I promise." I rushed to assure her I wasn't falling into old habits. "I just need to think for a bit. Is that okay?" The lights in the foyer brightened in assent, and I lifted the cage. "Look who's back!" The curtain near the window where Keith's empty cage sat rippled in excitement, and I transferred the little guy back into his own home. The smaller one I would toss out tomorrow to be on the safe side. Keeping any gift from the Grand Dame, no matter how benign it appeared, struck me as asking for trouble. After trudging upstairs, I changed into Boaz's rumpled shirt and crawled under the covers in the cool darkness while my mind raced frantic circles around all I had learned tonight. At least I had confirmation of who I owed the favor. Now the question would be, when did she plan to collect? 11. I choked on a scream and scrabbled deeper into the corner. I was panting through the worst of the pounding heart and screaming adrenaline dump when I understood what had woken me. The doorbell. Wooly flipped on every light in my room and cranked them up to blinding levels to urge me to my feet. I pulled on a bra and cut off shorts before padding downstairs and pressing my eye to the peephole. A short man decked out in a navy three-piece suit stood on my welcome mat. Green eyes flicked up to the fisheye lens, and he winked at me, aware he was being watched. His tan skin made the white sleeve of his shirt pop when he reached up to adjust the mop of black curls sliding across his forehead. Wooly unlocked the door, and I pulled it open, careful to keep on my side of the threshold.
"Can I help you? Dame Woolworth?"
The impulse to glance behind me to see if Maud stood there twitched in my neck.
"Greer, Woolworth, yes."
Though
Now that he'd mentioned it, I suppose with Maud gone, I was the current title holder. I'm Omar Hakohen. He extended his arm. I work for the office of the Grand Dame. You don't say. I made no move to accept his hand. What can I do for you? For me? Not much. The leather portfolio he slapped against his thigh bore the insignia of my financial institution. This visit is all about what I can do for you. Uh-huh. I cocked an eyebrow. You're not trying to sell me a used car, are you? Ouch. He gave an exaggerated wince. Do I really cast off the snake oil salesman vibe? Yes. A little. We got work to do, girlie. You want to do it out here or in there? I wasn't in the mood to invite a stranger working for my aunt into my home, so I joined him on the porch and shut the door to give me something to lean against. Out here is fine. Access to your funds were granted earlier today. A heavy packet with my name emblazoned on it was the first thing I saw when he flipped open the folio. You have a new debit card in there, along with all your new account information. The urge to rip into the packet and hold that rectangular piece of heaven in my hands twitched in my fingers. The promise of financial solvency had me salivating harder than the time I spied on Boaz skinny-dipping with his friends. This was more than the ability to keep the lights on and the fridge stocked. With access to my inheritance, I could afford a specialist to repair Wooly's foundation. More than that, I could erase all the years of neglect from her creaking floorboards to her leaking windows to her peeling paint. I could give the old girl a facelift that would make her the envy of the town. Before we get to all that, Mr. Hakohen said, pulling a pen from the pocket of his single-breasted jacket, I got some forms for you to sign. Forcing myself to block out the stack of papers that would turn my world upside down for a third time, or was it the fourth? I was starting to lose count. I tried for nonchalance, so he wouldn't see I was ready to tear the activation strip off my new debit card with my teeth. Reinstating me took the better part of 2 hours. Just a few dozen initials, 30 or so signatures, and I was, once again, a woman of means who could afford all the Honeycrisp apples she could eat. Heck, I could invest in entire apple orchards to ensure an unlimited supply. Pleasure doing business with you, Mr. Hakohen said, slapping his folio closed. One of my cards is in your packet. You need anything, call me. I'll be handling your case. Does that make you a lawyer? He hadn't told me exactly what he did for my aunt, after all. Girlie, it makes me a hell of a lot of things. He ruffled his springy hair. I need to get back to the Lyceum to file these. Enjoy the rest of your night. Night, I called to him, cradling the packet against my chest. Thank you. Mr. Hakohen lifted a hand as he slid behind the wheel of his car. I waved and went back in the house. Though I had a shiny debit card burning a hole in my pocket, I wasn't about to play hooky. Better than most, I knew fortunes could change hands on a dime. I owed Cricket for hiring me on the spot, no questions asked, after I vanished on her last time. I would have been begging scraps from Amelie's table if not for Cricket's willingness to extend me a second chance. Oh, no. And the award for worst friend in the world goes to Greer Woolworth. Between the news of my reinstatement and the confrontation with Volkov, I had forgotten Amelie, my best friend, and I hadn't spared her a second thought as I climbed into bed and left her to wait up on me. Surely Boaz must have... But it wasn't his job to clean up after me. I retrieved my cell phone and dialed her up before I lost my courage. I don't have time for this right now, she answered on the second ring. I'm late for work. I'm sorry I stood you up last night. I dumped the thick packet on the bar. I should have called. Yes, you should have.
hurt throbbed in each syllable.
Boaz told me some of what happened. He said congratulations are in order.
The urge to ask what exactly he'd told her made me trip over a rug. Boaz was a lot of things. Mostly he was a pain in my butt. But he was trustworthy and loyal, and he wouldn't betray me, even to his sister. Not without a good reason.
Can we talk about it tonight after our shift? I wheedled. There's a cupcake with your name on it at Mallow.
My treat. I'll even spring for some of that hot chocolate you love.
Mallow. Come on. That's not fair. I'm trying to be mad here.
She huffed into the receiver. How can I hold on to my righteous anger when you're offering me sugar?
Is that a yes?
It was so a yes. I want you to know I'm only agreeing to this because those marshmallows are hand-cut and the chocolate is 75% cacao.
I can respect that.
Anything to get my foot back in the door.
See you in a few.
I pulled up my hair as I headed for the front door and slung my purse over my shoulder. My very light purse.
Fiddlesticks.
Volkov still had my wallet tucked in the silver purse from the inauguration. Guess I was obeying the speed limit tonight.
I'm off to work, I informed Willie. Call me if you need me.
A warm swirl of air tickled my bare feet as the floor register hummed with contentment. Despite her cheerfulness, I expected a fight when I reached for the doorknob. A thread of suspicion unspooled within me when her usual resistance never manifested. I didn't doubt she was happy to see my social circle had expanded beyond Amelie over the last several days, but I hadn't expected her to want me to go. Maybe this more self-assured Willie was the result of Boaz dropping in so often he might as well start paying rent, or Amelie traipsing around at all hours, or Keith tweeting his head off in front of the picture window, or the influx of new visitors. It was hard to tell what had been the tipping point, but her rooms were full of laughter and conversation. She had a family again. That's all she'd ever wanted. I was happy one of our wishes were so easily fulfilled. I was still thinking on Amelie when I reached the garage and bumped into Boaz and the gleaming monster that must be his new ride. I loosed a slow whistle and circled the bike, admiring her curves. Much like Jolene, she was crimson and chrome with a dash of black for contrast. The two bikes could have been siblings.
Hello, gorgeous, I breathed. Hi yourself.
The bike, I clarified, not that it did much to wipe the smug grin off his face.
How's your leg?
Still attached.
He caved under the intensity of my glare and gave me a report.
I've got some bruising and soreness, but it'll heal.
Happy?
It's nothing I can't handle.
Call me cynical, but I doubted he had gotten off that easy. The lines bracketing his mouth told me he was in pain, but doing his best to mask the ache of impact on his left leg.
What are you doing here?
Don't sound so suspicious.
He had the nerve to act hurt.
I came to offer you a ride to work.
Thanks to you, I have a ride.
I pushed the button on my fob to raise the garage door.
Besides, I have a date with your sister after work. No boys allowed.
Here's the thing.
He rubbed the base of his neck.
I stayed up last night thinking about everything.
He cut his eyes toward the shadows, like he expected one to break off from the cluster and start gunning for me.
You're pinging on the vamp's radar. They might not know exactly what you can do, but I'm betting there's a reason Volkov popped up when he did. And I'm guessing that means the Grand Dame isn't the only one with contacts inside the prison.
That makes sense.
I leaned against the side of the building.
The guards are necromancers, but the inmates are all kinds.
You get what that means, right?
Boaz waited for me to piece it together.
You can't go out alone. Not until the dust settles, and we know what we're up against. Leave it to Boaz to lump us together. I might as well be an honorary Pritchard, considering how he treated me as if I were one of their own. The feeling of belonging, well, it didn't suck. You can't babysit me. That's not fair to you. I fingered the fresh plastic in my pocket, newly activated, and considered him. I could hire you. Plenty of military and law enforcement guys do security. He snorted like I'd told the most hilarious joke ever. Get on the bike. You're not the boss of me. I followed up that zinger by planting my feet and refusing to budge. I'm not going to take advantage of you.
Crush my dreams, why don't you?
Can you be serious for 5 minutes?
I want to take care of you.
His eyes narrowed to irritated slits.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing. I wilted at his exasperation, hating how he viewed my craving for independence as rejection. Boaz smothered me because he loved me. I knew that. But I was tired of accepting his handouts without ever giving anything back. Even tonight, when I ought to hop on and avoid risking a ticket, I couldn't unstick my feet without saying my piece. I just want to take care of myself for a change.
We can get you there, he said after a minute. But you have to crawl before you can walk. And Squirt, you're still on your back with your legs kicking in the air like a flipped baby turtle.
Amelie was right. He really did have a weird fixation about getting me on my back. Gee, thanks. I glowered at him. I'm humbled by your faith in me.
You want your independence? Fine.
He grinned, a slow and feral thing.
Earn it. Work with me on self-defense. I'll have time to teach you the basics before I leave, and I'll hook you up with a former army friend, Taslima.
He sighed at my finger quotes around the word friend.
I didn't have sex with her. She shut me down. So you already have that in common. Taz can keep the classes going.
Working all night and then coming home to a butt-whooping from Boaz before dawn, I could think of a million things I'd rather do, but not a single one I ought to choose over what he was offering. I had too much riding on my ability to fend for myself to turn up my nose at his offer.
Well,
he taunted and stuck out his hand.
What do you say?
For better or worse, I shook his hand. You've got yourself a deal. 12. Boaz dropped me off a half dozen steps from the front doors of Haint Misbehavin, like I could manage to get in trouble between him and the entryway. I wasn't sure if I ought to be insulted 6 feet was as far as he trusted me, or grateful I didn't have to risk another late-night rendezvous with my stalker pyre. Shift ends in 6 hours. I climbed off the bike. I'll catch a ride with Amelie DeMallow. Are you headed home?
I'll be around, he said vaguely. Got your phone?
Yes, Mom. I patted my cross-body purse. I have ibuprofen in case of headaches and bandages in case of blisters, too.
Good girl.
He let my sarcasm slide right off him and twisted his mouth up into a smile that promised nothing but trouble.
Have fun.
Worried about what that smile promised, I hurried inside and bumped into Amelie. Was that Boaz? She craned to see over my shoulder. I thought I heard that stupid bike of his. He gave me a ride. Her nose crinkled. How literal are we talking? For the millionth time, I'm not having sex with your brother. Or any sex at all, despite the ridiculous injection of testosterone my life had received. But since you spend so much time imagining us bumping uglies, if our uglies ever do bump, you'll be the first person I call with all the juicy details. You could have just told me to keep my nose out of your business. We're practically sisters. We had been stuck like glue since I came to live with Maud,
way before my boy crazy phase made me forget about that time I caught Boaz eating his own boogers on a dare. Mostly. Okay, so not even hormones could erase some horrors. That makes it my solemn duty to inflict as much emotional distress and mental anguish on you as humanly possible.
If that was your plan, then you succeeded beyond your wildest dreams.
Voices drifted down the hall from the room where Neely held court, meaning we had a few minutes until our turns with hair and makeup. Amelie led the way into the women's parlor, and we started pulling on our costumes. Her gown was buttery yellow and complemented her golden blonde hair and warm brown eyes. The room bustled with the other female haints prepping for the long night ahead, so we kept conversation light and didn't talk about any of the things that mattered until Neely called for us. While Neely worked on Amelie, I thumbed through a few of the magazines he kept scattered around his workspace. Several sported blank sticky notes over brunette models with builds similar to mine, confirming my suspicions that I dressed so poorly he had resorted to shopping for me in his head as a form of therapy. A petite woman edging toward 50 popped her head in the room. Dressed in a black satin swing dress straight out of the 50s, with her blonde hair pinned in victory rolls, Cricket was less Southern Belle and more rockabilly in mourning.
Neely, she mouthed around an unlit cigarette. Enough with the primping. Amelie, get your butt in my office.
She snapped her fingers.
Move it.
Being a good little employee, Amelie hopped straight to her feet and followed Cricket out. Neely guided me into the chair, then leaned around the corner to make sure the coast was clear.
I didn't want to say anything in front of Amelie, but I've been dying to ask.
He vibrated with excitement.
How did your date go with Volkov?
It was life-changing, terrifying, amazing. Not bad. He's a decent guy. Decent in the vampire sense of the word, which was not quite the same as the human one.
That hardly sounds like a declaration of undying love.
Undying. Good one. I haven't known him long enough for him to inspire more than the occasional hot flash. Honestly, I wasn't sure how much of that was true attraction versus the lure, and I might not ever be.
Chemistry is important.
He tapped my nose with the end of his brush.
It's not as important as mutual respect, financial solvency, or humor, but it's up there.
It's been my experience, the better you know a person, the more connected you feel to them, and the more attractive they become to you. Comforted by the tickle of soft bristles over the bridge of my nose, it struck me why these sessions appealed to me when I was ultimately too lazy to learn how to apply more than mascara and lip gloss. Neely's medium might not be ink, but his brushes had been the only ones on my skin for the longest time.
What about Boaz?
Neely shot me a look that dared me to deny we shared a spark.
The polite thing to do would have been to go with a man on each arm.
They both put so much effort into impressing you.
Seems a shame you had to choose. Why let one go to waste?
I'm not starting a harem. Though a blonde and a brunette wasn't a bad place to start. The grapevine would be buzzing after last night with rumors circulating about whose arm I arrived on and whose car I left in. None of that factored in Boaz's swoon-worthy save, either. I would have appeared quite the social butterfly, or worse, when nothing was further from the truth. All I needed was for the pearl clutchers and uptight suits with daughters of a marriageable age to think I was collecting eligible bachelors from all levels of society. That would win me allies. Or, you know, a knife through my kidney.
This is a judgment-free zone.
He started twisting my hair into a thick braid.
So I expect you not to judge me when I say you should get out there and see what life has to offer before you settle down with one guy for the rest of your life. You're young.
Have some fun.
Break some rules.
Most days, it felt like I had broken enough rules to last a lifetime.
How much did life offer you before you settled down?
Enough, he said with a sharp exhale. I met his gaze in the mirror.
Is everything okay?
People just suck sometimes.
Recalling Cruz's hostility, I had to ask.
You'd tell me if you were having problems with someone at work, right?
You need this job more than I do.
He squeezed my shoulder, then reached for the curling iron.
The last thing I'd do was let you step into this flaming hot mess.
Warmth flooded my chest that he would place my financial problems above his own equally serious ones. But that was just Neely. He had no idea this job was now a hobby for me, and selfish as it might be, I didn't want him viewing me in a different light. Everyone else was already sizing me up for their own purposes. Until I put in my notice or Amelie blabbed, I was content to be my old ramen-slurping self where he was concerned. But, as the saying goes, with great power comes great responsibility, and I wasn't about to let this abuse go unpunished.
Let me know if you change your mind.
I gave myself a once-over when he stepped back and admired his work, understanding more now than I had last night what Neely meant when he said this was my character look, not my me look. I'm off to spook the pants off my victims.
Just make sure you go through their pockets before you donate them.
He gave me a saucy wink.
Bring your waterproof parasol. There are showers in the forecast.
Ugh. The odds for more than a good misting must be low, or else Cricket would have put the kibosh on tonight's tours. Cancellations weren't for our benefit, naturally, but for the preservation of the dresses, suits, hats, and parasols, and to save on her dry-cleaning bill.
Good thing I'll be leaving with Amelie. I hate writing Jolene in the rain.
A shudder rippled through him.
I don't know how you can stand to ride her at all.
Bikes are freedom. Motorcycles are what happened when a man looked at his perfectly respectable bicycle and thought, how can I transform this into a flaming death machine? A laugh sneak attacked me, and I wheezed through the corset.
It's not for everyone, but still, don't knock it till you try it.
Bring Cruz to my house sometime. I'll give you guys lessons.
His demeanor softened. He would look good in leather.
See? I swished toward the door. It's a win-win. On my way past the bulletin board, I pulled down the envelope with my list of victims and skimmed the details on each group. 15 in one and 8 in another. A grumble worked its way past my lips before I remembered tips weren't do or die tonight. Armed with that comforting thought, I headed to the point of no return.
"Excuse me, miss," an all-too-innocent voice drawled behind me. "I'm a last-minute addition to your tour. Here's my ticket."
I stopped walking and started counting backwards from 10.
"Boaz, what do you think you're doing?"
"Cricket said your groups were light tonight."
He pressed a torn stub into my hand.
"She was thrilled to sell me tickets for back-to-back tours."
He rubbed his hands together.
"Let's see what you got."
Mentally, I rerouted the later tour so he wouldn't have to trudge along the same path. "I expect you to behave."
"I'm a paying customer."
He slapped his palm over his heart.
"Whatever happened to the customer's always right?"
That only counts for actual customers and not annoying big brother types. With a twist of my wrist, I stuck out the parasol I'd been using as a walking stick, a habit Cricket abhorred, out in front of him. Busy watching the swish of my skirts, Boaz tripped and stumbled into an awkward crouch on the pavement.
"Oh, sir, are you all right?"
I projected my voice to reach my victims and cranked up the charm.
"I do apologize. Please forgive little old me. I hope you aren't injured."
"No harm done."
His smile promised retribution.
Can you give me a hand up?
It was a trap. It had to be. I did not want to give that man my hand while he had that look in his eyes. But we had the crowd's attention now, and there was no going back.
Of course.
He stood without applying an ounce of pressure on me and brought my hand up to his mouth, where he pressed a lingering kiss into my palm, then closed my fingers over the spot his lips had caressed. I angled my body away from the group, then rolled my eyes so they whirled like tops. Still in character, I bobbed in a neat curtsy, reclaimed my hand, and strolled toward the gathering. Several of the women sized Boaz up with slow perusals, wetting their lips like they couldn't wait to taste him. A few of the men puffed up at the shift in attention away from them, but their chests deflated upon noticing I was the sole target of Boaz's lethal charm. Lucky me. We set out after I gave the booze talk, Boaz leading the pack, and I guided us down one of my favorite routes, the one that passed a haunted brewery open to the public on the weekends. The Clark family owns the Black Dog Brewery. The bar is street level, and there's a fantastic garden out back. I highly recommend the stuffed jalapenos, but I've heard good things about their burgers, too. The downstairs is under renovation at the moment, and it's got its own creepy history. But tonight, we're going to focus on the two stories above the bar that are so haunted, the ghosts refuse to allow the renovations necessary for the business to expand. I got a few interested murmurs out of that one, so I pushed ahead. The last time Mr. Clark attempted to have the second floor brought up to code, he got calls from his furious workers demanding compensation for their ruined equipment. Apparently, several guys had left their larger and therefore more expensive power tools upstairs overnight, and when they came back the next morning, all the windows had been thrown open, even the ones painted shut, and their drills, saws, and nail guns had been tossed out onto the street.
That can't be true, a gruff man argued.
The teen boy next to him smirked.
What? You don't believe in ghosts, man?
No.
He shifted on his feet, uncomfortable in the spotlight.
I don't believe that thousands of dollars worth of power tools would still be on the street in the morning.
Tittering laughter rippled through the crowd, and I joined in. I can't argue that logic. How do you know this stuff actually happened? A girl asked from under the boy's arm. Are y'all given a script or something? Unlike my annoyance with out-and-out skeptics who seemed to book tours for the sole purpose of making the guide's nights miserable, I could appreciate a healthy dose of honest doubt. Each guide is required to study the history of the locations on every individual route. That information is pulled from books, old newspaper clippings, and the internet. I gave what I hoped was a winning smile to the man who asked the original question. We're all guilty of exaggeration to create a juicier story. I held up a hand to forestall their next questions. But, and this is an important but, the bare bones are true. Go home. Google. You'll find all the information I covered tonight and so much more.
Cool,
the teens murmured in sync, cementing my assumption of their coupledom. Any more questions? I must have done something right, because the crowd shook its head in unison. In that case, y'all can follow me right across the street to the oldest restaurant in Savannah.
You've got them eating out of the palm of your hand,
Boaz murmured near my elbow. Stepping into a role is freeing. The job helped me feel normal for a few hours a night. As much as any Southern belle spewing grisly horror stories for tips can be called normal. It's a fun job.
Amelie's always loved it.
He appeared thoughtful.
She's going to miss it when she graduates and picks up full-time work in her field.
Once a haint, always a haint. I twirled my parasol. She can always pitch in at Halloween if she starts pining for the good old days.
Hard to believe she'll have her MBA in a few years.
He shook his head like it might help him absorb the fact his little sister was growing up.
A master's in business administration. What will she even do with that?
Jealousy. That old green-eyed monster reared its ugly head, and I'm ashamed how long it took me to defang. I hated that petty side of me. Hated how I envied Amelie's bright future. Hated being so screwed up, I kept enabling the cycle. We had always planned on sharing a dorm room, or maybe getting a small apartment off campus. But that hadn't happened. Obviously. Living at home had to be saving her a ton of money, though. So there was a bright side in there. And it's not like it was her fault that when I held the future we'd planned against the one I'd been handed, I fell short. I'd earned my GED after a few weeks of classes, but there were gaps in my formal education as well as my necromantic one. In a prison where parole was a pipe dream and the inmates were drugged until all they could string together was drool, the society wasted no funds on bettering us. And with Amelie nearing her final stretch, I had no hope of catching up to her. Just the thought of being the new kid again. Marketing, I answered after too long of a pause, quoting the answer she'd given me when I'd asked the same question. Accounting, management, computer information systems, whatever that means.
I have an associate degree in criminal justice.
Really? I glanced over at him. I didn't know that. Congrats. I bet the pics of you in your cap and gown. I tried picturing him, all solemn and dignified. Instead, I remembered the catastrophe that had been his high school graduation. Did you wear clothes under the gown this time? His eyes crinkled at the corners.
That's between me and the goddess.
I burst out laughing. That's a no.
Cut me some slack.
His wounded act failed, courtesy of the mischief glinting in his eyes.
I'm trying to impress you here.
Impress? Boaz had been as naked as the day he was born under that gown, and he wanted me thinking long and hard about what I'd missed out on. Emphasis on the long and the hard. That part of Boaz's anatomy had ceased to be a mystery the day he walked on stage, accepted his diploma with one hand, and hiked up his gown to moon the crowd with the other. To this day, I'm not sure if I ought to be thankful I didn't get the full moon, or if the side peen I glimpsed was somehow worse. Exhibitionism was apparently a turn-on for him. Shocker. A prickling sense of unease swept over me as we neared the restaurant, and I slowed my pace.
Keep walking, Squirt.
Boaz waited for me to catch up to him.
They won't make a move in front of so many witnesses.
They? Three men played checkers on the swayback front porch. When we got within 5 yards of them, the tallest one lifted his head, met my gaze, and winked at me. It's my stalker pyre. Looks like he brought friends.
Stalker pyre?
He chuckled before patting a chest pocket on the leather jacket he hadn't removed.
Don't worry. I brought friends of my own.
Stakes? There were no laws that said you couldn't arm yourself against other supernatural races. But the society found the notion of self-defense so unseemly as to punish those who got caught brandishing weapons sharper than their wit. They were under the mistaken impression that, as the race who created vampirism, vampires were somehow beholden unto necromancers. While that might be strictly true, and most were respectful enough, the perfume had faded from that rose long ago. Vamps didn't appreciate being treated as second-class citizens, but the society never let them forget their place, as evidenced by their subfloor seating at the Lyceum. What are the odds of this not ending in blood? I whispered out of the side of my mouth, while smiling back at my victims, hoping they believed the lie they saw written on my face and ignored the clanging of their inner warning bells. Running from a predator was a bad idea. It turned those warning bells into dinner bells real quick. I need to get these people to safety.
These people are your safety.
Cannon fodder was what he meant.
These guys have been following us for the last 5 blocks.
That they got here ahead of us is a bad thing, Greer. It means they're learning your roots.
Hunting me like feral cats, with one mouse to split between them. Why didn't you say anything?
There's nothing you could have done, so why worry you?
His logic was sound, and I got why he'd kept his mouth shut. But his attitude reminded me so much of Volkov at that moment, I was amazed when smoke didn't pour out of my ears. Protecting me was one thing. Coddling me was another. I didn't care if my only choices were exsanguination or exsanguination with a side order of kidnapping. I wanted to make that call for myself, even when the answer was obvious. I wanted the courtesy of being asked instead of having my fate decided for me. Again. I'll do what I can to drag out the last three stops, but we need to hash out a plan.
I've got it covered, he assured me.
I bet you do. I stormed off to begin my recitation. Though my skin crawled when I turned my back on the vamps, I trusted Boaz to save me from becoming a pincushion. This is the Rum Runner, founded back in 1789 by the pirate. The vamps gave up all pretense of playing their game to listen in and sneer at us. The crowd got restless, their hindbrains twitching without understanding why, and I hurried through the rest of my talking points. As my group hit the sidewalk, heading toward a more residential area with brighter streetlights, they shook off the worst of their unease. Why were those guys being so rude? I located the speaker, the teenage girl, and took a moment to pause and address the group. The sad truth is, some locals get their jollies by heckling guides in their groups. I don't see the appeal, but it happens at least once a week. I'm sorry it happened to you. At least the skeptics I got. They wanted a forum to voice their contrary opinion, and they were willing to pay money to one-up a guy peddling the opposite of their beliefs, even when it ruined what should have been a fun outing for everyone else. A total waste of cash, if you ask me. But whatever. Locals showing their backsides, though, that I didn't get. Sure, the Southern Belle thing might be a tad ridiculous, but that was half the fun. Ghost tours were a booming industry in towns with a claim to a bloody heritage. We helped the tourist trade. We kept history, albeit the gorier side of it, alive. Where was the harm? Why the hate? Of course, telling my group that vampires were stalking us was more likely to end with my faux victims becoming actual victims when they swarmed the vamps and started quizzing them on their undead lives and asking the usual questions about how one went about getting bitten. Receiving the bite was easy. Heck, there were vampire restaurants where they chose willing humans right off the menu. But much like the misguided warglore claiming one bite would turn you into a slavering wolf on the nights of the full moon, a vampire bite wouldn't turn you immortal either. Neither would drinking their blood, though I did once see a human get high that way. Want to become a vamp? You need a willing necromancer, a signed contract, and a verified money transfer before that happens. The group shuffled, eager to keep moving toward the lights. These victims were getting the short end of the stick tonight, between the tool debate and the leering vampire debacle. I sensed a few of them were ready for this to end so they could go back to their hotels, and I hated their evening had been a downer. We breezed through two stops when the crowd remained listless. The vamps had trailed us. I could sense them in the prickling of the fine hairs down my nape. Or maybe that was my imagination running wild. We reached the point of, hey, you made it back, and the crowd dispersed in an eager rush. Boaz ushered me inside, then set off toward a cluster of shadows, pooling under a Bradford pear tree, heavy with white blossoms. Amelie met me in the hall dressed in jeans, a tee, and sneakers. Wasting no time, she shackled my wrist with her fingers. We're going out the back. She hauled me toward the rear exit. Boaz is distracting them for us. I can't leave. Cricket would murder me if I left in one of her gowns. I pulled against her. And I still have one tour left.
Not quite.
Neely swaggered from his makeshift salon and struck a pose in the hallway. His dark gray trousers looked painted on, but his matching frock coat hid a multitude of sins, and his cravat, tied with an intentional air of negligence, made him appear quite the dandy. The stovepipe that he doffed in our direction completed the ensemble. I have one tour left. I let Amelie drag me a few more steps. You don't have to do this. Sure I do. He shoved up my skirt in the front, untied the bow, cinching the hoop skirt in at my waist, and shoved the frame down around my feet like a coiled slinky. That's what friends are for. He drew back and inspected me. That'll do. This way you'll fit in the car. Thanks, Neely. I kissed his cheek. You're the best. Yes, well, your boyfriend's tip paid for Cruz and me to rent a cabin for the weekend up on Stone Mountain. It's the least I can do. Caving to Amelie's sense of urgency, I followed her out the rear exit. What about your tours? I'm done. Remember when Cricket pulled me into her office? She was telling me the private tour I had tonight canceled. The bride has mono. She herded me toward her car. With Neely covering for you, we're both off the hook. What did you tell him? The truth wasn't an option. Why does he think I had to ditch? I didn't have to tell him anything except you needed a favor. Stupid tears wavered in my vision. Neely was a good egg. Where are we going? I climbed in her car and waited for her to join me. I'm guessing Mallow is out of the question. Boaz said to get you home. She cranked the engine, then sped out of the lot, hands white-knuckled on the wheel. We can have burgers delivered if you want. I don't have anywhere to be since I'm off early. For once, I don't have any studying to do either. Classes don't start back until next week. She glanced over at me. It's been forever since we spent more than 5 minutes together. Burgers it is, then. I pulled up the app for our favorite pub and started ordering. To molten lava cake for dessert, or not to molten lava cake for dessert? How is that even a question? When she was right, she was right. 13. The delivery girl almost beat us to the front door, and I could have kissed her rosy cheeks once the smell of hand-cut fries hit my nose. Food made my situation seem less dire. Food that I could now pay for without counting out lint-covered pennies I dug from under the couch cushions would taste even sweeter. While I swiped my debit card through the girl's card reader and tacked on a fat tip to encourage her to zip out here next time I ordered, Amelie carried the bags into the kitchen and set up our feast. I picked up the Oregon Trail card game last week, I said while bumping the door shut with my hip. Do you want to see who can die of dysentery first? The Oregon Trail was the first video game I had ever played. Amelie had a brother, so she was no stranger to the virtual landscape. Being an only child with a caretaker who was known to grumble over the switch from horse and buggy to automobiles meant the antiquated program on our school computers was my first exposure to gaming. Though Amelie would have bust a gut laughing if I called it that out loud. Maybe after we eat. She stuck her face in the bag and inhaled. That game always makes me hungry. Me too. I rubbed my stomach. I always run out of food first. We settled on our usual stools and passed out the grub, not wasting time on things like manners, before digging in with moans of approval. Boaz told me you've been reinstated as the Woolworth heir, she said around a bite of hamburger. It's nowhere near enough for what they put you through, but it's a good start. I assume that means they forked over your inheritance, too? They did indeed. And it could all vanish again in the blink of an eye. Have you considered setting up an offshore account? She asked, too casually. I haven't even checked to see how much is in there, so... That's a no. I laughed off the suggestion until I caught her expression. You're serious? Promise you won't tell my lunkhead brother about this? Cross my heart. He coped with you being gone by planning prison breaks, and I might have gotten wrapped up in the logistics with him a time or two. He had all these contingency plans outlined, but I kept circling back to how expensive it would be to live your life on the run, and it got me thinking about your inheritance. Maud was old school. Remember how much she hated checkbooks? Forget credit or debit cards. She shook her head. What kept me up nights was thinking if she'd diversified instead of lumping all her cash in one bank, and a society branch at that, you might have been set. Offshore accounts are the best option, and I do mean multiples. But normal human banks would offer you some protection, too. You think I might be in a position where I need this one day? Hard to blame her when I felt the same. I think the new Grand Dame has a vested interest in you, and until we know what that is, you're in danger. Seeming to have lost her appetite, she set down her food. You don't want to draw her attention if she's watching your account. Considering the society had established it themselves, that was a given. But withdrawing a little here and a little there and using it to pad your contingency plan seems like a solid idea to me. Chest bowed with pride, I was seriously impressed with her advice and felt like more of a heel than ever for begrudging her the education she had worked so hard to earn. Boaz and I were wondering what you planned on doing with your MBA. I'll have to let him know you're using your education to mastermind cushy lives for fugitives. Hey, she dusted off her shoulder. Somebody's got to do it. After inhaling a handful of salty fries, I noticed we had nothing to wash them down with and stood. Do you want some tea or lemonade? Tea, please. A text message chimed in Amelie's pocket, and she pulled out her cell and skimmed the screen. Boaz lost the vampires. I flicked a glance at the front door, like they might be polite enough to knock first before devolving into fist-banging and more threats. Have they realized you sneaked me out yet? I'll ask. Her fingers blurred over the keys. Before she hit send, the phone rang. I'm not slow, she snapped, in the voice reserved for her brother. I have short fingers. She listened for a second. Greer is right here, safe and sound. No. Are you crazy? Wait, don't answer that. She thrust the phone at me. You deal with him. What is your damage? I asked through a mouthful of juicy burger goodness.
The vamps scattered after the late tour departed, he panted, footsteps hammering in the background. They must have gotten the tour schedule from Cricket. She wouldn't think anything of a victim requesting a specific guide. That, or they've been watching you long enough to figure it out on their own. Either way, it's bad news. The leader peeled off when you didn't lead the 9 o'clock tour, but I spotted him circling the block in a black Escalade. When the midnight group left and you were nowhere in sight, the whole crew ditched.
Do you think they'll come after me at home? My stalker pyre wasn't shy about trespassing.
I'd bet money on it.
Metal clinked in the background.
Be there in a few.
See you when you get here. I ended the call and then exhaled. Boaz is on his way. What about the vampires? We might have company. I packed up my food and shoved it in the fridge for later. While I was up, I took a moment to check the jury-rigged wards, but their low-level hum indicated they were holding firm. Let's hope Boaz gets here before they do. Amelie's hand lifted to her throat, and she rubbed the skin there with her fingertips. A knock on the door interrupted me before I could pour us drinks, and we exchanged wary glances. Sit tight, I told her, and stalked across the room where I peered through the peephole. Volkov grinned at me, and his usual guards flanked him, both armed to the teeth. Blowing out an exhale, I rested my forehead against the door. Looks like we have backup. Volkov might be pissed about how things played out last night, but he wouldn't burn any bridges until I gave him back his bangle. Still, I double-checked with Wooly. Is it safe? The chandelier crystals tinkled like laughter. The door swung open under my fingers, and Volkov lifted a gauzy scrap of royal blue fabric.
This was found in our box. The courier from the Lyceum returned it to me since we arrived together.
The silver purse full of my ID was clutched in his hand.
And this I forgot to return to you last night.
Thank you. I pocketed Amelie's cell for a minute while I reached out and snagged the purse. I meant to text you to arrange for a pickup, but I got distracted. You saved me a trip. In my haste to welcome our potential allies, I'd forgotten one critically important detail. The part about how Volkov wasn't technically my ally. His fingers latched around my wrist where my bangle wasn't, and he dialed up his lure to a smolder. Warmth spread up my arm, through my chest, past my jaw, until sparkles danced across my field of vision. Heat pulsed low in my stomach, and I smiled at him, tipsy, as the purse thudded at my feet. One slow pull, and I stood in the circle of Volkov's arms before I registered making the decision to move. A light bulb flashed over my head. The vampires, they were the ones who had tampered with Wooly's wards, tweaking them, testing them, until she allowed one in the house, and I had been too weak to notice them severing our connection until it was too late. No wonder Volkov hadn't risked coming inside again. The potential of me locating the damage and repairing it now that I had access to society resources was too high. The porch light flashed in panicked bursts until the bulb fizzled from the overload, and the porch went dark. That explained why my light bulb moment had been literal.
There's someone I would like you to meet.
He nuzzled me, the rasp of his beard delicious against my skin.
Will you come with me?
Greer, Amelie cried out. Don't! One of the guards lunged at her, smacking against the invisible barrier filling the doorway, and she screamed.
Come with me,
Volkov coaxed, the scent of him effervescent in my blood.
Would you like that?
I curled against his chest, breathing him in, and let him guide me down the stairs. The driver tipped his chin at me and opened the rear passenger door. Another male sat across from me, our knees brushing. A trill of fear shot up my spine, and my heart rate spiked. I remember you.
Shh.
Volkov joined us, hauling me into his lap with gentle hands.
Pay him no mind. We should have done this from the start,
the male sighed, his voice husky and deep.
I wasted a week of my time on recon when you could have hooked her from the start and saved us all this trouble.
His voice sounded so familiar. I angled my head for a peek at his face, but Volkov cupped my jaw and turned me back to him. Try as I might, I couldn't look away from the storm gathering in his thundercloud eyes.
I had hoped to earn her trust.
His thumb kneaded the thin skin over my carotid.
I wanted a willing partner. You can make her willing.
The other male cracked his knuckles in rapid succession.
After a few months, she won't know the difference.
A flicker of panic tripped my pulse, but Volkov used his scent to ease my fears.
The master should have left this matter up to me.
His fingers traced the high curve of my cheekbones.
I could have made her see reason. All I needed was more time. Is that why one of my guys spotted her wearing that necromancer shirt to bed?
A growl pumped through Volkov's chest that rattled my teeth.
Mine.
The vibration soothed me, and I snuggled closer against him, burying my face in the curve of his throat.
Dial it down a few notches.
The other male coughed a few times.
Or I'll have to crack a window.
The words no sooner left his mouth than fists pummeled the glass near my head. A man with warm brown eyes, his lips snarled up in a promise of retribution, bellowed my